As Barack Obama's home state, there had been a push to implement a key component of the president's signature health care plan. Instead, General Assembly leaders collectively decided to shelve their work on a so-called insurance exchange. But now there's pressure on Governor Pat Quinn to pick up where legislators left off. Amanda Vinicky reports.
Say you're ready to take a trip to Florida. Plenty of airlines fly there, but you're looking for the best price, an airport nearby, and because you're packing heavy, you want a lax luggage policy. Travel companies like Orbitz and Travelocity have made it easy for you to compare the options. Take that concept and apply it to health insurance. That's how Illinois' Campaign for Better Health Care's Jim Duffett describes an insurance exchange.
I mean, you're going to be able to go to a website, or you'll be able to talk to people one-on-one, and there's going to be at least a range of four different types of plans that you're going to be able to choose to figure out what plan fits your needs.
Under the Federal Affordable Care Act, that's how individuals and small businesses without coverage are supposed to get insurance. Federal law says states either set up an exchange or the feds will do it for them. Representative Frank Montino, a Democrat from Spring Valley, had been leading Illinois' effort to design an exchange. But then in March, the U.S. Supreme Court heard a case challenging the constitutionality of what's come to be known as Obamacare.
I've suspended the talks on the creation of the Illinois Insurance Exchange until the Supreme Court makes its decision.
Montino says the resulting uncertainty took the air out of the room.
As the negotiator, it's very difficult to have groups decide how much they're willing to, especially businesses, decide how much they're willing to pay to run an exchange when the federal law may go away. My goal is to do this with Democrat and Republican votes in a bipartisan fashion. With that case pending, I can't get that.
Montino hints at the political dynamics in play. In short, Republicans are trying to make the health care law a campaign issue in the fall election, so they don't want to take any votes that could be seen as going along with it. And Democrats don't want the political liability of creating an exchange without GOP support. Plus, Illinois no longer has an incentive to rush. The feds all but abandoned their original deadline for states to act. Nevertheless, Jim Duffett says Illinois needs to get moving if it's going to have the exchange up and running by 2014.
The longer we wait, everybody's going to hurt. You know, we're going to be losing 6 months of precious time in moving this forward.
While the legislature's on hold, his group is calling on Governor Pat Quinn to follow the lead of New York and Rhode Island, where the governor's used executive authority to set up an exchange without the legislature.
We don't support that.
That's Laura Minzer, director of the Healthcare Council for the Illinois Chamber of Commerce.
You're crafting a new marketplace, and to have kind of the unilateral decision made at the executive level is just not appropriate. We know other states have done that. However, I think it's just counterproductive.
Mike Brady, a lobbyist for the Illinois Insurance Association, agrees.
He should let the legislative process continue out, because unless you build some consensus in this exchange, you're not going to have success with it.
In fact, Brady says an executive order could backfire. If people apply to the exchange and their income's low enough, they'd bypass the federally subsidized insurance and end up on the state's Medicaid rolls.
The initial studies that were done show at least 25% or more of the people who will be purchasing on the exchange will be eligible for Medicaid.
He says that could mean up to 300,000 more people on Medicaid at just the time Quinn's been trying to cut the program. Brady also questions what Quinn has to gain by circumventing the legislature. While the governor has the authority to issue an executive order establishing an exchange, he needs the legislature to pay for it. All for something that, depending on how the Supreme Court rules, could be null and void. After all, critics say, without the federal health care law, an exchange wouldn't work because insurance companies would have no reason to participate. But the Campaign for Better Health Care's Jim Duffett sees it differently. He says even if the court overturns Obamacare and people are not legally required to buy health insurance, Illinois should proceed with an exchange anyway.
Instead of maybe getting 1.2 million people into the marketplace, Illinois may have 600,000 to 700,000 people. It's still a lot of people who can get access to health care, and still a large pool. So we're just urging the governor to step up, show his leadership.
There are vague rumors Quinn will act and set up an exchange after spring session, or after the Supreme Court decision, or after the fall election. No matter when, it would be a bold move, a way to show he's out in front of the legislative leaders. The governor's office declined to make his point man on the issue available for an interview. Instead, Quinn's press team sent a statement saying the administration is committed to creating an exchange and is laying the groundwork. That includes deciding what benefits insurers would have to offer. It could also mean deciding who would run the exchange and whether the insurance companies will get a seat at the table. With a stroke of his pen, Quinn could settle the battle healthcare advocates and insurance companies have been waging for months. Then again, he could leave that to the legislature and the Supreme Court to figure out. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
The NBA and NHL seasons are coming to a close, but as commentator Frank DeFord points out, you couldn't be faulted for overlooking them.
It's the climax of the hockey and basketball seasons, but both have potential playoff visibility problems. Let me explain. Okay, the NBA first. As you know, basketball is the most individualized, celebrityized team game. Like movie stars, the best players are known by their first names. LeBron, Kobe, Dirk. Every basketball superstar wants to take his talents to a hot dog big-time market. Or at least marry a Kardashian. So for goodness sakes, why is San Antonio once again the best team? And what is the matter with the Spurs' perennial star, Tim Duncan? Who? Tim Duncan is not only not known just as Tim, he is not even known as Duncan. In fact, he's always called Tim Duncan to make sure we remember who he is. Tim Duncan just doesn't get it. He's happy playing down there in San Antonio. He never tries to get his coach fired. He even likes his coach, Greg Popovich, who everybody just calls Pop. Pop doesn't get it either. He's been quietly coaching the Spurs since 1996, and even though he is the coach of the year again, he doesn't think he is either a genius or a guru. Tim Duncan has himself been hiding in San Antonio since 1997, after he graduated from college with honors. He is so weird, he never even gets in the columns. So it's really not even going to seem like the NBA if Tim Duncan and Pop lead San Antonio back to the championship. Of course, outside the greater Alamo area, maybe nobody will even notice. Now, that's the exact problem the whole entire complete National Hockey League has. This is because what we used to call the sports world is actually now ESPN world. And of all the major leagues, ESPN doesn't carry the NHL. As a consequence, the NHL is like a tree falling in the forest, because pretty much if a sport isn't on ESPN, then it doesn't count as a sport. Poker became a sport when ESPN started showing it. Angry hockey people even tabulate the few minutes that ESPN deigns to mention the NHL. ESPN replies that hockey is not in the national discussion. The NHL is not just like LeBron or Kobe or Baby Bumps or Mitt Romney's dog. In fact, to ESPN, the NHL is rather like Tim Duncan. Hockey fans say that the NHL can't be in the national discussion unless ESPN discusses it. Because in American sports today, that's how you get national. You get on ESPN. ESPN might have a problem, though. The New York Rangers and the Los Angeles Kings may very well end up playing in the NHL Finals. Is ESPN even bigger than L.A. and New York together? Stay tuned.
The comments of Frank DeFord. His latest book is Overtime, My Life as a Sports Writer. His commentaries air every Wednesday on Morning Edition.
This fall, visit England and Wales, locations made famous in Last of the Summer Wine, Downton Abbey, and more, including Agatha Christie's home on the coast of South Devon. Does American history suit you? Well, travel in private vintage train cars on our Civil War train. This September's itinerary includes important southern battlefields and discussions with historian Anthony Pitch. Information is at will.illinois.edu/willtravel or call 217-333-7300.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 23rd of May, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Jane Kenyon, born Ann Arbor, 1947. She married her professor at the University of Michigan, the poet Donald Hall, and went to live in New Hampshire on his ancestral farm. Published only 4 books of poetry before she died from leukemia at the age of 47. Donald Hall wrote of their life together, We got up early in the morning. I brought Jane coffee in bed. She walked the dog, then climbed the stairs to work at her desk on her poems. We had lunch. We lay down together. We rose and worked at other things. I read aloud to Jane. We played scoreless ping pong. We read the mail. We worked again. We ate supper, talked, read books, sitting across from each other in the living room, and went to sleep. If we were lucky, the phone didn't ring all day. It's the birthday of Margaret Wise Brown, born Brooklyn, 1910. She was a socialite. She was tall. She had blonde hair, bright green eyes. Never had children herself, but she was a teacher in a progressive school, the Bank Street Experimental School in New York. And she wrote two children's classics, The Runaway Bunny and Goodnight Moon. Died suddenly at the age of 42 on a book tour in Europe, stricken with appendicitis, had an emergency appendectomy, seemed to be recovering, decided to show her doctor how good she felt, so she kicked up her leg in a can-can, which caused an embolism, and she died instantly. And it's the birthday of the novelist Ursula Hege, born Dusseldorf, Germany, 1946. Emigrated to this country, she was embarrassed to tell people that she was German, wrote two novels set in the United States, and then in 1990 wrote Floating in My Mother's Palm, set in the fictional town of Bergdorf, Germany, and then another, Stones from the River, about a woman who is a dwarf, an outsider in the village, and who watches the Nazis come to power in Germany and her fellow townspeople turn against their Jewish neighbors. Here's a poem for today by Jane Kenyon entitled Church Fair. Who knows what I might find on tables under the maple trees? Perhaps a saucer in Aunt Lois's china pattern to replace the one I broke the summer I was 13 and visiting for a week. Never in all these years have I thought of it without a warm surge of embarrassment. I'll go through the closets and cupboards to find things for the auction. I'll bake a peach pie for the food table and rolls for the supper, Grandma Kenyon's recipe, which came down to me along with her legs and her brooding disposition. Mrs. Kenyon, the doctor used to tell her, you are simply killing yourself with work. This she repeated often, with keen satisfaction. She lived to be 103, surviving all her children, including the one so sickly at birth that she had to carry him everywhere on a pillow for the first 4 months. Father suffered from a weak chest, bronchitis, pneumonia, and pleurisy, and early on, book